From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank talked with Father Themmie, a former atheist rock star turned missionary priest serving in one of the poorest countries in the world, Sierra Leone. Well, let's now join Hank as he introduces Father Themmie.
And welcome to another edition of Hank Unplugged, the podcast that is bringing some of the most interesting, informative, inspiring people to you, people that I've known well, people that are making a difference for time and for eternity. Today, I have the distinct pleasure of talking to someone that I've gotten to know over the last few years. His name is Father Themmie. He was born in Egypt. He grew up in Australia, where he explored Marxism and became a rock star. Eventually, he got a master's at Princeton and a doctorate at Brown. But now he is doing something that I think is probably more important in terms of an example to all of us, and that is he's an Orthodox father, a monk in Sierra Leone. This is one of the most impoverished places on the entire planet. And there's a story behind Father Themmie going to Sierra Leone. We'll talk about all of that and more on today's podcast. Father Themmie, I'm just so grateful to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Hank. And finally, after a couple of false starts, we finally got it. Anyway, how are you, Hank?
Well, I'm doing great. You know, I've gone through a lot of chemotherapy, and I haven't really missed a beat. The Lord has given me strength that's incredible. And I'll say in that regard, Father Themmie, that I was so encouraged. You were one of the first people to call me, and you said, I'll never forget, you said, Hank, West Africa is praying for you. And the prayers of God's people have sustained me.
Well, I'll tell you something else that should sustain you as well. Today, in our time here in Melbourne, it is now Thursday, and it's like we just finished a church service for Saint Nectarios. For your listeners who don't know who that is, Saint Nectarios is a contemporary saint. One who lived in the 20th century and died in the 20th century. He's a saint who has experienced, you know, what an airplane is, what a telephone is, what a radio is. You know, we don't get many saints who know what telephones are or who know what airplanes are or cars. You know, most of the Catholic and Orthodox saints lived, you know, 1,500 years ago. But this Saint Nectarios is a contemporary saint of our time who suffered enormously, enormously. He suffered persecution even within the church, even by Christians. Fellow Christians persecuted him, you know. And he was accused of this, accused of that, accused of everything you can think of. But he persevered. He persevered. He didn't hit back. He didn't strike back. He prayed for his enemies. He prayed for those who were jealous. He was actually an archbishop, but they had kicked him out of the church. He couldn't preach. He couldn't do any services. He went through a terrible time, and they accused him of so many things. And eventually, the Lord clarified everything, and the Lord justified him. And those people now that were persecuting him were the very people who eventually realized who he was, and he's now a saint. He's now a saint. So. In this world, my friend, there will be persecution, and by Christians against Christians, and that is the most horrible and the most painful and the most distasteful. When the atheist persecutes me, I am glad because I receive blessings from the Lord. But when my fellow Christians persecute me, or my fellow Christians, condemn me, when my fellow Christians dishonor me. Then I praise the Lord for that, but it's more painful. It's more painful, you know. So that is who Saint Nectarius is, and I offer his example and his strength because I believe that you're going through a very similar situation, Hank.
Well, it has been an interesting situation, and you know, I often think about what you have just said in terms of the words of Jesus Christ: "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you on account of me. Rejoice and be glad, for great is your reward in heaven." And, you know, when I think about persecution, honestly, Father Themi, what I'm going through in terms of persecution is very minimal. When you think about the kinds of persecutions that people are facing in the Middle East, where there's mass genocide with respect to Christians that are brothers and sisters, and that's squarely in the blind spot of the West.
The Coptic Church, for example, the Coptic people in Egypt, what they have to go through, and the Christians in Syria and the Christians in Pakistan. You know, there's a blasphemy law that if you say anything contrary to the Quran, and, you know, you can be killed. And sometimes people may falsify. Listen, I don't like you. I don't like Hank. So I'll find something and I'll say you blasphemed. You spoke against the prophet. Therefore, I will condemn you and I'll get your property or something like that. So these poor Christians, what they have to go through, you know, you're right. You're right. But you also are facing a different form of persecution. And to my mind, it's a bit strange that fellow Christians of another persuasion should consider that the Orthodox Church is idolatry, or the Orthodox Church is a non-authentically Christian tradition, when in fact it is the tradition that gave us the New Testament. It is the tradition that hangs on to the apostolic teaching. So I find that either they have a very superficial knowledge of the Orthodox Church, or else maybe we Orthodox haven't done our work properly to present the Church to the Western world. So perhaps it's a two-way blame, you know?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think there are two things going on. Oftentimes, I liken this to a jewel. And you take a jewel, and the metaphor actually might go well with what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 13, where a man finds a pearl of great price, and he sells everything he has to possess that pearl. But the problem is, oftentimes within Orthodoxy, you have those people who have the pearl, but the pearl's in a box to protect the pearl, and then there's another box around the box to protect box and the pearl, and pretty soon you lose touch with the pearl itself.
Right, that's right. It's 100% right. And I think the Orthodox Church in the Western world has a duty to witness its tradition, because after all, it has a 2,000-year history. So surely some people would be interested in that. Surely some people will be interested. And I think, Brother Hank, I think that's sort of like your new challenge, my friend.
Yeah, so it's not only that people within the church don't have an understanding of the pearl that they possess, but people outside the church, they don't know what Orthodoxy is, but they're pretty sure they don't like it. One of the things that I just experienced recently is a friend of mine who's a major mega force in the evangelical Christian world. And I've spent a lot of time having dinners with him over the years. I've had him on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. I mean, I like him on a personal level, played a lot of golf with him. But he came out in a video and he said that I joined something that ought to be not joined, but rather cursed. And, you know, some of it was because he was talking about how when I was chrismated, a rag was placed on my head, and that rag was infused with divine light and life and these kinds of things. And he didn't understand what that was. And so, well, he had a very, very bad opinion of that. But he also makes this dichotomy that's been made in the Western Church between faith and works. As you well know, Father Themi, in the Eastern Church, you know, never put faith up against works. It wasn't this dichotomization. We simply have the kind of faith that expresses itself in love. But in his mind, I had embraced some kind of a crass system of works righteousness.
The dichotomy, you're quite right, begins as an unfortunate misunderstanding by Martin Luther. He didn't mean to, but when he was given the job of lecturing the letter to the Galatians, and it's true, it's in Galatians, it says you are justified by your faith. But then if we look further in Galatians, and the fruit of the Spirit, if you are Spirit-filled, then you have to show love, you have to show joy, you have to show administration. There's all these gifts that are shown that are part of, well, I guess you could call the works part. But it seems as if Martin Luther, whom I respect, by the way, gave us this false dichotomy, and the West has stuck to that ever since. So that's part of the misunderstanding as well. But if we look at the New Testament, if you look at what Jesus said, right, forget Martin Luther right now, look at what Jesus said. I was hungry and you came and fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me to drink, right? I was naked and you clothed me. And then he will say, well, come, you who did this to the least of my brothers, you shall inherit the kingdom of God. And the verb that you did it, it's an action verb. It's a works. It's not a passive. It's an action-filled activity, come into the kingdom. So salvation, according to Matthew 25, comes by works.
Yeah.
Salvation comes by works, according to Matthew 25, right? But what we do as a church is not take one paragraph or one teaching and then say, that's it. We look at the totality of the New Covenant teachings and say, look, it looks like works are important. It looks like faith is very important. It looks like this. And then you come up with the conclusion, we need both faith and we need works. We don't try to divorce them. But unfortunately, in the case of Martin Luther, who was only interested in Galatians, he made that unfortunate emphasis on the one, forgetting the other.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying is the emphasis that you're placing on this is taking the whole of Scripture and taking what Paul said, what Jesus said, what James said. I mean, what did James say? He said,
correct,
you see,
correct,
that a person is justified by what he does and not by faith alone. Now, again,
well,
I think the beauty of orthodoxy...
Martin Luther wanted to drop the letter of James from the New Testament. I don't know if you know that or not.
Yeah, he called it an epistle of straw.
Yeah. But look, this is not to diminish in any way faith. My goodness, without faith in Jesus, we are lost. Without faith in Jesus, we can do nothing. Without faith in Jesus, we are absolutely nowhere. But because I believe in Jesus, because I love Jesus, because I have that faith, the gift of faith, I must now reciprocate by doing something to show that I have received the charisms. I have received the gifts. Now I'm going to do something. Feed him. Take care of him. Because that's what he wants. That's what he told us to do. But without faith, look, this is non-negotiable. Faith is absolutely fundamental. And our Protestant brothers are right, of course. But what happens to works, though, to show your faith? Where is the works that show your faith? Anyway, let's move on, Hank.
Yeah, I want to move on, but let me just park on this for just a moment more, and then we'll move on to what you're talking about with respect to taking care of those who are downtrodden and needy. But I was thinking here about St. Mark the Ascetic, who offers perhaps the clearest statement in early church literature demonstrating that believers are not made righteous by good works, rather that true faith will manifest itself, as you just pointed out, in good works, and that without good works,
correct,
one does not have genuine,
correct,
saving faith. But what he said, and this,
correct,
was in a treatise on those who think that they are made righteous by works, And I almost memorized this now because I love the way he put it. And I also love, you know, his history. He had memorized virtually the whole Bible. And so he's a great example to all of us. But he said that when Scripture says he will reward every man according to his works, and I think he's there pointing to Matthew chapter 16, he says, do not imagine that works in themselves merit either hell or the kingdom. On the contrary, Christ rewards each man according to whether his works are done with faith or without faith in himself. And he is not a dealer bound by contract, but God, our Creator and our Redeemer. And I thought that was profound and kind of sums up the whole situation. But let's move on. Let's talk about your works in Sierra Leone. You have told me on occasion that there are some 20,000 children each and every day that die of hunger, and that is an atrocity.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Father Themi. Advocates for same-sex sexuality disconnect sexuality from biological identity. Is this liberating, or does it denigrate biology? Discover the truth in Nancy Piercy's recent book, Love Thy Body, answering hard questions about life and sexuality. To receive your copy of Love Thy Body as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-transforming outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. We'll be right back after the break with more of the Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Father Themi on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man. Of Nancy Piercy's recent book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality, Professor Robert P. George of Princeton University says, liberal secularist ideology rests on a mistake, and Nancy Piercy puts her finger right on it. In embracing abortion, euthanasia, homosexual conduct and relationships, transgenderism and the like, liberal secularism is philosophically as well as theologically untenable. Piercy is precisely clear about what makes humans valuable. Don't just read, master Love Thy Body. To receive your hardcover copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-transforming outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. First, a prominent voice for the Nation of Islam, and then for a violent alternative to Martin Luther King Jr.'s civil rights approach, Malcolm X is arguably one of the most important African-American thinkers. His ethic of violence is more compatible with Christian ethics than many would think, but the two nonetheless diverge at a crucial point. Other topics include the apologetic value of coincidences in New Testament reporting, new atheist evangelism, spirituality in modern hip-hop, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today at a special limited-time discount rate by calling 888-7000-CRI. 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org.
Welcome back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. On today's special edition, we're bringing to you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank talked with Father Themi, a missionary priest serving in Sierra Leone. Turning the tables on the media boilerplate that portrays Christianity as harsh and hateful, especially concerning same-sex sexuality, transgenderism, and abortion, Nancy Piercy makes the compelling case that Christianity sustains the dignity of the body and accords with science and biology. Don't miss Love Thy Body, answering hard questions about life and sexuality. To receive your hardcover copy of Love Thy Body as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Let's rejoin Hank and Father Themi in their conversation.
You have told me on occasion that there are some 20,000 children each and every day that die of hunger, and that is an atrocity that ought to be in the forefront of the minds
figure,
of Christians.
But the figure is 25,000 die each day in the world, of which 17.5 are in Africa, and they are all under 5 years of age. So today, 17,500 children died in Africa under the age of five, and tomorrow another 17,500 will die. That's enough every day to fill a stadium in NBA, even more than an NBA match between the Boston Celtics and the New York, whatever they're called.
The Knicks.
The Boston Garden could not fit 17,000 people, I don't think. Well, let's say they could. That would be every day so many children dying of hunger and poverty and diseases. That is the biggest scandal that I think the world is facing today. Sometimes, now I'm going to be a little bit, I'm going to stand out here and go on a limb. But, we, of course, you particularly in America have a big problem with shooters and gun issues. Now, I'm not American, and I'm not going to step into your controversy, particularly in the light of the Second Amendment. But I will say this, that yes, that is shocking what is happening in the States, all these shootings every so often. And maybe there is something to be said for gun control. But when you consider how many people die of shootings in America every year, what would it be, Hank? Would it be 2,000, 3,000? What would it be? What would be the total?
It might be a little higher than that, but it's significant. But the point is, by comparison, it's insignificant.
By comparison, every day, poverty kills 17,500 kids in Africa. Now, I'm not diminishing by any means, and please, I hope nobody misunderstands me. I'm not diminishing the people who died in the States through some crazy guy killing them. That is absolutely horrible, and may God have mercy on those people who died. But what all I'm saying is, while we should be up in arms about that, then how much more up in arms should we be about the scandal of 17,500 kids dying every day?
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember you saying that with the Ebola crisis, it wasn't until Ebola affected Americans that Americans paid any attention to what was going on in Africa. And now we have the monkey pox, and the same thing is happening again. That's resurfaced in Nigeria, but it really doesn't register on our radar until it starts affecting someone in the U.S.
Well, not only the U.S., but also in Europe. I mean, the European Union did the same thing. Great Britain, the U.K. did the same thing. They were not interested. We were dying there, and there was no foreign help whatsoever. If anything, they were shutting down transport. The British Airways shut down. They flew no more into Sierra Leone. Some of the other carriers shut down. Ships would refuse to come to port to bring supplies. If anything, we were being shut down. And to repeat, as you correctly point out, when the threat became imminent for Europe, a nurse went back to London carrying the Ebola virus. Well, now suddenly everybody was interested in the UK, and they did send help, and we have to acknowledge that, and we thank them. The same thing with the US when the Liberian gentleman came over and carried the Ebola virus. Suddenly, there was a lot of help that came from the US to Liberia. So, you know, unfortunately, there is a double standard here. And also, you know, it's as if there are two planets in this world. There is the third, so-called third world, and then the so-called first world. And every time I fly from one to the other, it's so obvious that this disparity, this economic disparity exists between the really poor nations. By the way, the 10 poorest nations in the world are all in Africa. The 10 poorest nations in the world are all in Africa. So it's just an amazing drama that we seem not to be much concerned about.
You've been right in the middle of it. I mean, you were in the epicenter of the Ebola crisis. I mean, you saw people dying in the streets. And what I thought was incredible as an Orthodox priest, that you are giving the Eucharist to people in the midst of all of this, and no one died.
Yes. No one died. Nobody died. And it's just, nobody died.
They were experiencing the real presence of Christ, and they trusted in that so much that in the midst of an epidemic.
Well, I can tell you something else. I was in the midst of an HIV/AIDS crisis in Kenya when I was there a few years ago before I went to Sierra Leone. And I was given a parish in Nairobi, on the outskirts of Nairobi, the capital city of Kenya. And one third of my congregation had HIV or AIDS. You know, at least one third. May God forgive me if I'm exaggerating or lessening the numbers, but a substantial number had HIV or full-blown AIDS. Now, as you know, in our tradition, we give the holy cup, and then at the end of it, the priest has to consume it all himself. Have to consume it, right? So after I'd given communion to people who obviously had HIV, then at the end of it, I had to drink all the remains from the cup, the remain, with all the saliva that had been put into the spoon and then into the cup. I can assure you, Hank, I don't have HIV/AIDS.
Talk for a minute about the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist. I mean, this is something that was a unanimous belief of the church through Martin Luther. Martin Luther said, if there is one thing I could have disagreed with the papists on, it would have been the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist. But the unanimous testimony of the church is that Christ is really present. And I don't know if you know this, Father Theme, I'm sure you probably do, but there was a colloquy. And in that colloquy between Martin Luther and Zwingli, the Swiss reformer, asked Martin Luther, how could Christ really be present in the Eucharist? And this was in the context of him accusing Luther of bread worship. And Luther responded by saying, if you can explain to me how Christ can be one person with two natures, I'll explain to you how Christ can really be present in the Eucharist. Now, this is an example of why I am so excited about the Eucharist, because in my previous Christian life, I partook of the Eucharist or the Lord's table occasionally. However, it was always considered to be a remembrance as opposed to the real presence of Christ. And now when I partake of the Eucharist, I'm recognizing that I'm partaking of uncreated energy, for only God is uncreated. And so something dynamic and profound is taking place. And I think that is the pearl of great price. I mean, it is the grace by which, one of the graces, but a chief grace, the chief grace, by which I can become by grace what God is by nature. I can never become what God is in the Godhead, but I can experience the graces whereby I can become a partaker in the divine nature.
Mm-hmm. Well, Hank, let me help you out a bit here. For those of your listeners who say, wait a minute, that's not in the scriptures, okay? Let me take you somewhere that is often forgotten by biblical scholars. John chapter, I think 8, I could be wrong, but I don't have it at the moment in my mind correctly, the exact chapter and verse. But I'm sure you know, some of your listeners would remember what I'm saying. Jesus says to them, unless ye eat of my flesh and drink of my blood, ye shall not have life. And then it says, and some of them left him. Some of the so-called disciples there, I mean, not the 12, but the others, left him. And it explains why. Because this was a hard saying. Now, here's my point. Why would they leave him if it was just a remembrance thing? If it was just, look, just do this in here's a cup of wine and some bread. Do this in remembrance of me. That's not a hard saying. But what he says was, tuto esti, this is my blood. This is my body. He who does not drink or eat of it shall not have life. And some of them left him for that saying because it was a hard saying. Now, it doesn't take a PhD from Harvard to work out that he didn't just mean there. He didn't mean it just to be, well, look, when you get together, just, you know, get some bread out, some wine out, and just remember me. If that was the case, why would they leave him? The Jews were quite used to these celebrations of wine and bread. There was nothing scandalous about it. But they were scandalized by that saying.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
People around him.
Yes.
I'm sure you remember that.
Oh, yeah. Passage. In fact, it's John chapter 6, and the context is just as you say. I mean, the Jews were arguing among themselves, you know, how can this man, they're talking about Jesus, how can he give us his flesh to eat? And then Jesus responds, again, just as you said, Jesus tells them, I tell you the truth, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you, because whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life.
Because it was a hard saying. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, it's...
Why would they leave him? Yeah, yeah. In other words, they misunderstood him, exactly what he meant. They misunderstood it. And the other... By the way, Hank, in the early catacombs of Rome, when the authorities, the Roman authorities, would send down spies to report back on the Christians and what they were doing, among the reports that were coming back to the Roman authorities of the catacomb Christians was one that they appeared to be immoral. And the reason for that was because they were kissing each other, the kiss of peace, you know? So that was misunderstood as being immoral by the Roman spies, okay? The other one was, and they perceived that they were cannibals. Now, why would they say that? If you read in the early Roman reports about the Christians, and they're accused of cannibalism. Why would they be accused of cannibalism? Because they would turn up and say, you are now drinking his blood and now eating his flesh. So, and the Romans who were there spying, with, oh my goodness, they're eating the flesh of someone they had just killed, whose name was Christus.
We'll pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Father Thimmy in just a few moments. The Bible Answer Man broadcast and CRI's growing array of outreaches have never been more needed than they are today. And that's why we won't be shy in asking you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute through your persistent prayers and generous financial support. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI in the battle for life and truth and receive a copy of Nancy Piercy's essential new book, Love Thy Body, answering hard questions about life and sexuality as our thanks for your gift. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be right back after the break with more of the Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Father Thimmy on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. You may find yourself approached on the street for a discussion about religious faith. Sounds like Christian street witnessing, right? It could rather be you're facing an atheist and often a GoPro video recorder engaging you in street epistemology. Many complying Christians have miserably failed this very public test displayed on YouTube, but this need not be you. Other topics include Malcolm X and the Christian ethic of violence, the apologetic value of coincidences in New Testament reporting, and much, much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today at a special limited time discount rate by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org.
Of Nancy Piercy's recent book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality, Professor Robert P. George of Princeton University says, liberal secularist ideology rests on a mistake, and Nancy Piercy puts her finger right on it. In embracing abortion, euthanasia, homosexual conduct and relationships, transgenderism and the like, liberal secularism is philosophically as well as theologically untenable. Piercy is precisely clear about what makes humans valuable. Don't just read, master, love thy body. To receive your hardcover copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-transforming outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. You've tuned in to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Trans activists detach gender from biological sex. Kids down to kindergarten are being taught their bodies are irrelevant. Is this affirming or does it demean the body? Find out in Nancy Piercy's new book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. To receive your hardcover copy of Love Thy Body as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Let's rejoin Hank's conversation with Father Thimmy.
Among the reports that were coming back to the Roman authorities of the catacomb Christians was one that they appeared to be immoral. And the reason for that was because they were kissing each other, the kiss of peace, you know. So that was misunderstood as being immoral by the Roman spies, okay? The other one was, and they perceived that they were cannibal. Now, why would they say that? If you read in the early Roman reports about the Christians, they're accused of cannibalism. Why would they be accused of cannibalism? Because they would turn up and say, you are now drinking his blood and now eating his flesh. So, and the Romans who were there spying, they said, oh my goodness, they're eating the flesh of someone they had just killed, whose name was Christus. So further reinforcement there.
And again, there's so much reinforcement throughout church history. This was the unanimous belief of all Christians for 16 centuries.
Yes, right up to Martin Luther, as you point out. It was only after Martin Luther, after 1,500 years of Christianity, that somehow people were now enlightened. You know, after 1,500 years separation from the apostolic church, that suddenly we're enlightened now and we know better than the apostles.
I want to get to something else, but something you just said, I think it bears elaboration. The Orthodox are not innovators. They're trying to perpetuate what the Judeo-Christian tradition was. In other words, the tradition passed on from Jesus to the apostles, from the apostles to the early church. They're not seeking to try to come up with something new, but rather to perpetuate the faith once for all delivered to the saints.
Yes, and that becomes, for modern Orthodoxy, a kind of a blessed dilemma, in the sense that you look at the Pentecostal churches and the way they worship, and it's in a very contemporary manner. It's almost like going, and I hope nobody misunderstands me, and I say with due humility, it's like going to a sort of a rock concert. It's like going to a, you know, and it's very well done in, to attract people, and there's a lot of music, there's a lot of modern contemporary music, there's a lot of preaching, which is fantastic. I love preaching. But the whole structure is of, in a very modern, contemporary manner, using all forms of modern technology, from the television to the sound system, to the presentation, to the stage setup. It's all extremely modern. On the other hand, we cannot attract that kind of, you know, 20,000 people in one sitting. Simply because, and I find that in Africa as well, that because the African people by nature have a tendency for dancing and singing, and they love, you know, they love to express themselves, you know, in a sort of by singing and dancing and so forth. So the Orthodox tradition can be somehow for the African, if it's presented in a very European way, quite challenging. So what we do in Sierra Leone, we take certain, we take the tradition that was handed on to us by the fathers through the liturgy, but it doesn't say anywhere in the liturgy that we have to stand like statues, we in the congregation. It doesn't say that. I don't find that anywhere in the liturgical structure, right? So what we do in Africa is adopt the tradition and then apply it in an African context where people are allowed to shout out, you know, hallelujah, or shout out, you know, blessed be the Lord, or whatever. So in other words, we, while still using the tradition, what we do is we apply St. Paul's principle: to the Greek I became Greek, to the Jew I become Jewish, to the weak I become weak, and to the strong I become strong. I become all people for the sake of the gospel of Christ. So what we do is we take the traditions of Orthodoxy and color them in an African manner.
You know, I can't help but say this. I mean, I got up at 5:30 this morning. I was at work before 6, and now in Charlotte, North Carolina, it's 8 o'clock at night.
Hank, I got up at 4. Okay.
Okay, so you beat me. But here's my point. I mean, that's exactly the point I wanted to get to. I mean, the thing that is absolutely amazing, and this is the point I wanted to make and have you elaborate on. But you know, I have cancer. You have a lot of physical issues as well. You can go into them if you want to or not. But here's the thing.
I'm really blind. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the point I want to make. I think it's absolutely stunning that God has given me the energy and enthusiasm that I have. And then when I talk to you, I think, wow, here is Father Themi. He's struggling with a lot of things. He's in Australia now. He's serving in Sierra Leone. I mean, he has so many things to deal with. And yet, when I'm talking to you, the passion is exuding from every single pore. And I think that's just absolutely heavenly.
Well, brother, it comes from faith, doesn't it? I mean, without faith, and now this is not to make it a dichotomy between faith and works, but unless there is the gift of faith, it's all not going to happen. It becomes a routine. It becomes a career. It becomes a job. It becomes a money-making enterprise. It becomes an organization. You build an organization, and then finally the organization is more important than the actual faith that made that organization to be what it is. So at the end of it all, we base ourselves on the gift that God has given us, unworthy as I am, and so forth. But if it wasn't for that faith, they wouldn't be able to do those things. So I give glory to God. I give glory to Him, you know, for giving the gift of faith.
You are just so exciting to be around. Now, don't blame me for this, Father Thammy, but you brought it up. You mentioned, you know, concerts and churches that kind of make it look like a rock event, but you were a rock star yourself. Talk about that.
Well, that's why I kind of understand what they're doing, and that's what I meant by them using contemporary methodology, and that's why people go to them. That's why the Pentecostals are so successful, and I have to admit that. And they're very successful in Africa, the most successful Christian group at the moment in terms of numbers. In terms of numbers, is undoubtedly the Pentecostal churches. All right, so because they present their message in a very contemporary manner. Whereas we in the Orthodox Church, and of course our Catholic brothers as well, we have the tradition. We can't play around with that. Otherwise, we're not Orthodox or we're not Catholic. But my point is, that's okay. That's great. We've got the treasure. Now, let's contemporize it, not by losing anything from it, but giving it the flavor of what where you are, the geographical cultural flavor, you know. For example, in America, the Orthodox churches, I believe, humbly I say that, with due respect to, I'm sure everybody's thought about it before me, but there would need to be some missionary churches in the United States that are there specifically doing everything in English, doing everything to, as it were, translate Orthodoxy into the American culture, Americanizing it, if you wish, but without losing Orthodoxy. You know, that's what the Russians have done. That's what the Greeks have done. That's what the Bulgarians have done. That is what the Serbians have done. That is what the, you know, all, you know, we say the Russian Orthodox Church, the Serbian Orthodox, the Greek Orthodox. So there is a place for Americanizing Orthodoxy. In the same way that it's been, you know, there's a Russian Orthodox tradition, there's a Serbian Orthodox tradition. It's still the same. It's still the same, but it has a Serbian flavor. It's still the same, but it has a Russian flavor. It's still the same, but it has a Greek flavor. Okay? That's the only, it's the flavor that is different. But the essence is absolutely the same. So what I'm doing in Africa is giving it the African flavor.
Hey, you're not getting out of this. I brought up your past, and that is you were a rock star.
Sorry. No. Let me go there. No, I'm sorry. You're quite right. The rock star. Yeah. When I was up to the age of 18, 19, I was an atheist, a total atheist. I did not believe in God, and I didn't have any time for Christianity. I just considered Christianity to be a waste of time. It's a religion for those who are weak, and you know, they have to have something to hang on to, and the only thing they can hang on to is this concept of a God that is somewhere else above. But for me, as a rational, you know, intelligent human being, such things are not, as a Marxist, to kick in as well, the opium of the masses. So I had no time for Christianity, let alone Orthodox Christianity. But the rock days came just before that. It came with the cultural assault of the Beatles. where they revised everything of the 50s. They revised the Presley years. They revised the Fonz years. They revised the Beatnik years. They revised the, you know, Connie Francis and, you know, Frankie Avalon years. And they brought something absolutely new, which is sort of a rebellious spirit. And the long hair, the screaming, you know, in their record, high energy. As a 17-year-old, 18-year-old, who already was playing guitar just in an amateur way, that just blew my mind away. So obviously, I wanted to be an Australian Beatle. So we formed an Australian Beatle group. Now, what are we going to call ourselves? By the way, the Beatles called themselves after the Crickets. Buddy Holly and the Crickets. So they got an inset, right? So they called themselves the Beatles. So we had to be an inset. What kind of an insect are we going to be? Well, it could have been a cockroach, or it could have been, you know, a centipede. But we chose the flies. We chose the worst inset, the most annoying inset, the fly. Okay? So we formed the Flies. And we had success. We had success in Australia. We had fan clubs. We did tours. We played with the Rolling Stones opening. We were the opening gig kind of thing. We played with, we're opening act for Little Millie, My Boy Lollipop, who was a huge success back in the 60s. And the beginning of reggae music. She was a Jamaican singer who had number one hit. Anyway, so from there, to Marxism, to eventually a Christian conversion, and then losing all my friends, all my cool friends, you know, because I'd become uncool by becoming a Christian.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Be sure to tune in again Monday when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with missionary priest Father Thimmy. In Love Thy Body, Nancy Piercy goes beyond politically correct slogans with a riveting expose of the dehumanizing worldview behind same-sex sexuality, transgenderism, abortion, euthanasia, and other watershed moral issues. In appreciation for your gift to help strengthen and expand the life-changing outreaches of CRI, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you the book Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. First a prominent voice for the Nation of Islam, and then for a violent alternative to Martin Luther King Jr.'s civil rights approach, Malcolm X is arguably one of the most important African-American thinkers. His ethic of violence is more compatible with Christian ethics than many would think, but the two nonetheless diverge at a crucial point. Other topics include the apologetic value of coincidences in New Testament reporting, new atheist evangelism, spirituality in modern hip-hop, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today at a special limited-time discount rate by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org.
Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you.